Do you remember the show, The Biggest Loser? It was an absolute blockbuster of a show. It was a massive hit worldwide. We had our own version here in Australia, and there was a version in the US that went for approximately 16 seasons, I think. And I don't know if you guys remember, but I remember it. I used to watch it, and you'd see the trainers scream at the contestants, like scream at them, like, try harder. You know, you're just do more. It was upsetting and like car crash television. You had to watch it. And what those contestants went through is they would exercise like absolutely crazy people. They would just exercise and exercise and exercise, and they would eat very little food. And as a result, they lost an enormous amount of weight. And at the end of the season, you'd have one Biggest Loser, and that would be the person that would win, say, $250,000 or something like that. And it was a complete transformation. But it was also pretty dangerous in a lot of ways. What happened to those contestants after they left? Well, there were many studies that showed that the contestants, most of the contestants, regained all of the weight they lost and more in some instances. Now, the new weight loss drugs have something in common with that show. And we're going to be talking about that today. And we're going to be talking about the various types of weight loss drugs and asking the question, is faster better? This is Investigating Ozempic, and I'm Bern. Welcome to episode 6. I've said all the way along during this podcast that this podcast is like a jigsaw puzzle. And it's not a junior one. It's a pretty tricky, complicated one. But once you've got all the pieces, it's quite easy to see the picture. So I'm going to run through what we've seen so far. The first piece is the obesity epidemic. We have a large obesity epidemic. I don't think anyone disputes that. The second puzzle piece is we've got these new weight loss drugs, or relatively new weight loss drugs. The third piece is government regulators and how they are now in the pocket of drug companies. The fourth piece is the goals of the two CEOs of Novo Nordisk and how they differ. The fifth piece is the stock price of Novo Nordisk and the pressure to keep that stock price high. The sixth puzzle piece is about the history of the GLP-1s. We look back in time at that. The seventh puzzle piece were the Ozempic clinical trials and what scientists had said at the time. The eighth puzzle piece was hiding clinical trial results, how drug companies can conduct trials yet not post results or even post these trials. So we can't see a fully complete picture or fully transparent picture of what has happened in the development of a drug. The ninth puzzle piece is the fact that drug companies want a blockbuster drug. They want a billion-dollar blockbuster drug. And then the 10th puzzle piece was the recommendation from extremely senior Danish scientist to possibly give daily dosages for weight loss. Now, this conflicts with the fact that we have Wegovy, which comes in a weekly dosage. Last week, we started looking at Wegovy. We looked at the Wegovy dosage trial and how they got that controversial 2.4 milligram through. We also asked the question, why did government regulators approve this dosage after scientists had expressed some concerns? Now, this week is almost a continuation of that. We're looking at Wegovy even further, and we delve into the clinical trials. And we look at the battle between the two big pharma, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk. There's been a battle going on that you're possibly not aware of. And it's between two huge pharma companies. One of them is Eli Lilly, who is a US pharmacy company, and the other is Novo Nordisk, who is a Danish company. I've been speaking about Novo Nordisk throughout this podcast. Novo Nordisk, they are the patent owners and the manufacturers of Ozempic and Wegovy. Ozempic is a diabetes drug that can be used off-label for weight loss, and Wegovy is a higher-dose weight loss drug, both containing semaglutide. Novo Nordisk also have an oral semaglutide tablet called Rybelsus. It's a once-a-day tablet. The percentage of weight loss found with Wegovy is approximately 15% of body weight over 68 weeks. And with the oral, Rybelsus, it's about 10 to 15% of body weight. So it's not as effective as the injection. And on top of that, you can only get Rybelsus if you have type 2 diabetes. It's not prescribed for weight loss as yet, unless it's off-label. Eli Lilly are the makers of Mounjaro and Zepbound. They are tirzepeptides. And they advertise that you can get up to a 22% average weight loss using a tirzepeptide. Mounjaro is the diabetes version of the drug, and Zepbound is the weight loss version of the drug. Same drug, different names, and doctors prescribe them at will. So you've got Ozempic and Wegovy, which are semaglutides, saying you can lose 15% of your body weight over 68 weeks. You've got Mounjaro and Zepbound, which are tirzepeptides, and they're claiming you can lose 22% of your body weight in average. So what do you think is going to be more popular? It's not hard to work out that the higher the claim of weight loss, the more people are going to want to lose that weight, because people seem to think that the faster the better and the more weight the better. And that is not necessarily true. We're going to be going into that today. But Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly have been battling for the last few years with their weight loss drugs. And it seems to be the public are buying the one or favoring the drug that has the higher percentage of weight loss. There is a new drug coming from Novo Nordisk called CagriSema. It contains two GLP-1s rather than one. They've claimed in their recent clinical trial that you can lose up to 23% of body weight, which is slightly higher than Mounjaro and Zepbound, but not much. It's only 1% higher. Initially, they made a claim saying that you could lose up to 25%, which is possibly more significant. But they didn't find that in their clinical trials. And what happened is when they didn't reach by that magic 25% number, their share price fell, because everybody knows that the public buys what has got the highest figure. It's got to do with the advertising, which is something that I know an awful lot about because I've spent most of my life in advertising. So the higher the figure, the more the public want it. Let the battle begin. In our last episode, we talked about Wegovy and the dosage for Wegovy, how it was considerably higher than Ozempic, and how scientists manipulated and played around with the clinical trials in order to get a higher dosage of Wegovy approved. Now, the reason that they were after a higher dosage is because a higher dosage generally corresponds with more weight loss, that higher magic number that they, all of those pharmacy companies are looking for, the higher percentage of weight loss that they're looking for. But unfortunately, generally, higher degrees of weight loss also correspond to higher degrees of side effects. We're going to be going into side effects next week because there are an awful lot of them. But go back and listen to last week's episode, all of the manipulations that happened and what the scientists said and their concerns about taking a higher dose, and how the scientists had said how a higher dose for weight loss generally wasn't great for people because it caused too many gastric issues. Go back and look at that. But the reason they want a higher dose is because it corresponds to more weight loss generally, and it generally corresponds to having that magic higher percentage so that they can then advertise it. Advertising is the gold. I can pretty much see what would have happened. I can imagine the advertising agency would have said, what is your percentage? What is your percentage? And, you know, if it wasn't higher than their competition's percentage, they might as well flush their money down the toilet or take a different tact, because they need that percentage to say, well, we are the fastest, because no one remembers the runner-up. No one. Think about it. Like, you know, no one remembers a runner-up. People are only after, if you've got a choice, they're going to choose the drug in general that has the higher percentage of weight loss. You know, I can imagine people sitting there in their doctor's office and their doctor's going, well, this one's been shown to, have a higher percentage of weight loss, because doctors don't have time to read shit. They're just skimming material. And people are going to go with recommendations like that. That's why it's so important to get that magic higher number. It's for the advertising. One thing I haven't talked about yet are the Wegovy clinical trials. And these trials are really interesting to look at, and I'm going to attach some of them in the show notes so you can have a look too. The diabetes clinical trials for Ozempic that Novo Nordisk held were called SUSTAIN, and it stood for the Semaglutide Unabated Sustainability in Treatment of Type 2 Diabetes. What a mouthful, right? The weight loss trials, which were the Wegovy trials, were called STEP, and that STEP stood for Semaglutide Treatment Effect in People with Obesity. Both of these trials cost billions of dollars, lots and lots of money. There's quite a few of the STEP trials, approximately 10 of them. What they do as clinical trials is they get a whole group of people and they test the drug on them to find out dosage and safety and side effects and how much body weight is lost. Clinical trials are very, very important, and they're very, very expensive. So pharmacy companies don't jump into these lightly. When we spoke about the CEOs of Novo Nordisk, you would have heard that the long-term CEO did not jump into the STEP clinical trials. He did not push the button to do weight loss trials for semaglutide. He exited the company and a new guy stepped in, and he was the one who pushed the button on those trials. Go back and listen to Diary of a CEO episode, which is really interesting. When I look at the STEP trials, which started in 2018 and finished in 2020, 2021, I can see that the dosages they tested were mostly a 2.4 milligram dose, which is what you find in Wegovy, and a 1 milligram dose, which is what you find in Ozempic, usually. But pretty much all of the STEP trials had that 2.4 milligram dosage. And the difference between the Ozempic trials and the Wegovy trials are a couple of things. They used a lot more females in the STEP trials than males. For example, in the STEP trial one, they used 955 females and 351 males. And in the STEP trial three, they used 315 females and 92 males. Now, you might ask why on earth they would do that. Well, there's a thing. When you take semaglutide, women tend to lose weight faster than men on semaglutide. And that's for a couple of different reasons. So that's generally thought to be for a couple of different reasons. And I'll go into those later when we talk about gender, the difference in gender. But the other thing that you need to know about these Wegovy clinical trials is that the average weight of people on these trials was well over 100 kilos. And for the Ozempic clinical trials, they were approximately 20 kilos lighter. And the reason that they would want to do that is because if you've got more weight to lose, you're going to lose it faster. You know, like if you think about it, if you've got someone who weighs 100 kilos and they're on a diet, or you've got someone who weighs 70 kilos and they're on a diet, who would you expect to lose more when they jump on the scales for the first week or the second week? It's going to be the heavier person. So they've used heavier people. Now, the big difference between the Wegovy trials and the Ozempic trials is the dosage given. With the Wegovy trial, it was the 2.4 milligram dose. And with the Ozempic trial, they were focusing on the 1 milligram dose. And that's really important because when you look at the side effects for the Ozempic clinical trials, the side effects average around, I'm just talking as a percentage reported, and you can go and look at these trials yourself, and I'd encourage you to do that. It's approximately 40% had adverse events. They call them an adverse event, but it basically means a side effect. And the big side effect that these semaglutides seem to cause on people are gastric side effects. So, for example, in the Ozempic clinical trial, which was called Sustain 4, that's an Ozempic trial, they tested a 0.5 milligram dosage and a 1 milligram dosage. And for the 0.5 dosage, the adverse events was 47.51% of people. And for the 1 milligram dosage, it was 53.33% of people. On top of that, there are serious adverse events. Serious adverse events are ones that you need to go to hospital for. There are another 6% on the 0.5 version and another nearly 5% on the 1 milligram dose. So, That's a fair whack of side effects. I think, you know, if 40% of people have got side effects, that's a fair whack. But then you go to the Wegovy clinical trials where they've upped the dose to 2.4 milligrams. And when I look at the STEP trial 5, which is a 2.4 milligram dosage, there were 92.76% of people reporting adverse events. So you can see when you go up a dosage, the side effects or the adverse events pretty much double, I would say, maybe more than double. When I looked at the STEP trial 3, the adverse events were 95.8% of people had adverse events. Now, also remember with these clinical trials, what they seem to do, and I've noticed this with all of the trials, is if you've got 100 people participating in the trial and 10 of the people drop out, they don't calculate the percentage on the new number of 90. They still calculate the percentage on the 100 number. So if they took into consideration all the people that dropped out, the figures would be even higher. The percentage would be higher. And in some cases, when I recalculated with the dropped out people, I found there was 100% of people with side effects. So, also with the STEP trial 3, because they certainly won't tell you this in the advertising, is they called it intensive behavioral therapy. Basically, what they did is they gave people a liquid diet for 8 weeks. Now, give me a liquid diet for 8 weeks, I'm going to lose a lot of weight, regardless of what drug I'm taking. They also had nutritionists and behavioral therapy. They encourage people to exercise every day. So you've got to ask yourself, how much is the drug and how much is all of the other stuff you're doing? The cutting back on food, the exercise, the therapist, the liquid diet, how much is that? How much is corresponding? When I look at the Ozempic trials compared to the Wegovy trials, I do wonder how the hell Wegovy got approved with so many side effects. Considering it had so many side effects, I wondered how it got approved at that higher dosage of 2.4. And it is really hard to work out. I know that the FDA, the TGA, who are the approving bodies, are in the pocket of these drug companies. But it looks like they've looked at these trials and gone, okay, 95% of people suffering from side effects, okay, that's okay, we'll approve it. I would have thought, I'm dumbfounded. I mean, I'm dumbfounded. I don't know how 2.4 milligrams got approved. I really don't, because of the amount of side effects. One of the arguments I hear all the time is that we've had these GLP-1 drugs. They're not new. We've had them for decades. And that's true. We've had slightly different versions that have been used for diabetes since 2005. What is different is the dosage and the time that those dosages last in the body when prescribed for weight loss. We've never had a 2.4 milligram dose of semaglutide, and we've never had that amount in the body. It's a significantly higher dose that lasts a significantly longer time than what was available in the past. I find that concerning. I know that we have to try drugs and they go out into the community and they get tried. But I do wonder about that higher dosage. I would like to see more flexibility with dosage, because what Novo Nordisk, what they recommend on their package and what the doctors invariably prescribe is an escalated dosage. So you start on 0.25, then they'll say after 4 weeks, double to 0.5. And then they'll say after another 4 weeks to double it again, and then possibly double it again. They say that the maintenance dosages for weight loss are either 1.7 or 2.4. I mean, they're aiming for 2.4. They basically say that on all of their packaging. I mentioned in a previous episode that in a 2019 review of GLP-1s from 25 leading scientists around the world, they made this statement. They said higher dosages of GLP-1s agonists can achieve clinically relevant weight loss, and greater increases in dose levels, in theory, can drive more weight-lowering efficiency. However, adverse gastrointestinal effects generally preclude the use of higher doses. This was in 2019. This was published 2 years before Wegovy was approved by the FDA in 2021 at nearly 2.5 times the dosage of Ozempic. What I spoke about last week was Wegovy's dose-finding study. And that I found that to be fascinating, because instead of using a weekly injection, which is how both Ozempic and Wegovy are required to be administered, this dose-finding study for Wegovy used a low daily injection on the 65% of women participating in the trial, with the maximum dosage per day being 0.4 milligram dosage. Now, I don't know how Novo Nordisk got away with giving these low daily dosages for a dose-finding trial, because no one on the planet is injecting Wegovy daily. It's directed to be a weekly injection. And I spoke about that last week. I also spoke about how the European Medicines Agency questioned this daily injection choice for the trial. And I attached that document last week. Now, fairly recently, teenagers are now being able to be prescribed Wegovy at a dosage of 2.4 milligrams. Now, Novo Nordisk has only conducted one single clinical trial on adolescents, and they did not conduct a separate dosage trial. But that seemed to be enough for the FDA to go, okay, start prescribing. I find that concerning. I don't know what you think, but I think there needs to be more testing before you start giving stuff to kids. There was a quote in a Wired interview in 2023. It was from Jens Juul Holst, which is one of the scientists involved with discovering the GLP-1s. And he said, "You don't eat through GLP-1 therapy because you've lost interest in food. That may eventually be a problem, that once you've been on this for a year or two, life is so miserably boring that you can't stand it any longer and you have to go back to your old life." I've found through speaking to people who take Wegovy and Ozempic for weight loss that dosage greatly affects the amount of food that they want to eat. For some people, taking a low dosage does the trick. They take the drug, the next morning they wake up, the food noises have gone in their head, and they can make better choices. And that's on a very low dosage. And there are some people that I've spoken to in an interview coming up on the next episode where it didn't really do anything for her. So I think everybody reacts very differently to semaglutides. And that's another reason why I think flexibility in dosage is important. I read a funny article in The New Yorker by David Sedaris, which was about a group of comedians having an audience with the Pope. He commented that, "I'd sat across from Whoopi Goldberg, who had no appetite and passed me all her plates after just a bite or two." Now, Whoopi's well known for being vocal about taking GLP-1s for weight loss, and I guess her appetite was turned off at this time. I also reached out to some of the Danish scientists involved with GLP-1s, and I got back a really interesting reply from one of the scientists. Now, he told me that a general experience, English is his second language, so keep that in mind, a general experience that some people stay for long on a certain, even low dose to avoid side effects. It is now generally accepted that this is a reasonable approach that may have good results in terms of weight loss. That kind of conflicts with Novo Nordisk dosage instructions. I believe, and I keep saying this, I believe the dosage instructions need to be much more flexible. What I've heard from people who have taken this drug is that when they take a higher dosage, they literally forget about food and they don't want to eat. But when they take a lower dosage, and I think it's a fine line of how much you take, and it needs to be monitored by a doctor, they can get to the point where food noises aren't interrupting them, they're not hungry all the time, and they can make better choices, and they don't have so many side effects. Because it's very common, I've spoken to many, many people, and the most common side effects that all the people I've spoken to have said is the gastric side effects. So I would ask the question is, why instruct doctors to tell patients to keep upping the dose to 2.4 if 0.25 milligram works fine for some? Is it because they want people to use more of the drug? You know, I'm thinking it because it sure looks like it would help with the multitude of side effects and the outrageous cost of this drug. I wondered what would happen if someone overdoses on semaglutide. Like takes a big dose. Now, according to Australia's Therapeutic Goods, overdoses of up to 4 milligrams in a single dose and up to 4 milligrams in a week have been reported in clinical trials. The most commonly reported adverse events was nausea, and all patients recovered without complications. Now, I wonder what happens when someone is taking too much of semaglutide over a sustained period of time. What harm does that do? Well, no one seems to know. I guess at the minimum, I don't understand why Novo Nordisk do not direct doctors to halt increasing the dosage when using Ozempic or Wegovy for weight loss if a healthy weight loss is being achieved with little side effects on a minimal dosage. I think a better outcome would be for everyone to be on a dose that is correct for them. And I think that these dosages possibly need to be personalized. I believe that we need much more flexibility with our dosages after speaking to everybody and reading all of the clinical trials. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but if you get people telling you the same thing all the time, it becomes quite obvious. I think all of us have heard the term Ozempic face. Now, it's not a medical term, it's just a social media term, and it means that you've suffered from some facial changes that occur with rapid weight loss using a Ozempic or Wegovy or other weight loss medication. And it generally means that your facial skin is sagging because the fat has gone out of it. And it can make you look quite old. I've seen people who look far older after they've had a rapid amount of weight loss. It's like, I kind of think of it as like, or it reminds me of like, you know, when people get really sick and they lose a lot of weight quite quickly and their face all sags. And it generally makes your face look a bit hollowed out and increases the look of your wrinkles and lines. And it, because you've lost fat. What's becoming quite popular is that people are going to get fillers. If they can, you know, afford to use Ozempic or Wegovy for weight loss and they've got the money for that, then what they do after it is they'll inject fillers into their face, which is, you know, distressing. I mean, that it's just not feasible or a realistic approach for most people. Because, you know, who wants to start injecting fillers into their face? I mean, I know it's extremely popular, but really, if you can just slow down the rate of your weight loss a bit, slow it down and not try and, you know, drop 2 kilos a week or however much, not try and drop an enormous amount of weight in a really short period of time, even though it's very tempting to want to do that. If you can do it in a more sustainable and long-term health way, then you won't end up with Ozempic face. There's another term. It's called Ozempic butt. And it's sagging skin again, and it's a result of extreme rapid weight loss while taking these drugs. These are kind of funny terms, but again, they're not medical terms. They're just social media terms. But it's something to think about. If you don't want lots of sagging on your face, which I sure as hell don't, then you possibly want to get to a dose that is going to slow down your appetite, but not stop your appetite. I think there is a fine line as to when you slow down your appetite, you know, you're not obsessed with food anymore, you're not thinking about it all the time, you're not running to the cupboard to eat biscuits and cookies and stopping your appetite. You don't want to stop your appetite because, I mean, food is one of the best things in life. It's important. And you know why? You know, you want to enjoy your food. You just don't want to be obsessed with it, right? You want to be able to enjoy it still, drop your weight, make healthy choices, and not be obsessed with it. And I think this is my belief, my personal belief is that everybody possibly needs a different dosage of Ozempic or Wegovy, semaglutides, for their own personal weight loss. And there are many things that make a difference. And number one is weight, what you weigh. Because imagine, think of it like this. You know, if there's a 300 kilo man and 120 kilo woman, yet you go in to get, they both go in to get Wegovy, they're getting the same dosage. Now, I would question that. I question that because I'm like, well, has a different effect to women, to men? Has a different effect with weight? These have been shown in their clinical trials. I think it needs to be more personalized. And that's why your doctor possibly needs to be involved. In the beginning of this episode, I talked about the Biggest Loser contestants. What happened with those contestants is most of them regained all of their weight back and more after losing the show. What they also did is they affected their resting metabolic rate by up to 600 calories a day. When you consume a very low-calorie diet for a sustained period of time, it can reset your body and make it harder to lose or even sustain weight. For example, your resting metabolic rate may have been 2,500 calories a day before you lost weight. And after weight loss, it might be only 1,900 calories a day. The degree of metabolic adaptation correlates with the average rate of weight loss. In other words, the faster you lose weight, the more it adapts. Our bodies are really clever at hanging on to weight. You can see this effect of fast weight loss in Ozempic face and Ozempic butt posts on Instagram. Ozempic face is the sagging and wrinkling of skin that may happen with rapid weight loss as the fat is not only gone from your body, but your face too. It's not what I want. I'm sure it's not what anyone wants. Plastic surgeons, they're another part of society that are generally not financially challenged, are cashing in on this one by injecting costly fillers. So when I go back to that clinical trial, the STEP clinical trial, where they put the participants on a reduced calorie diet, gave them therapy, asked them to exercise, cut back their food, and then gave them a liquid diet, this would have contributed towards a very fast rate of weight loss, which we know is not that healthy. That's not what the general medical advice is. In fact, the MHRA, which is the UK's drug evaluator, questioned some of the STEP clinical trials to be considered. In fact, they didn't allow some of the STEP clinical trials to be considered because of the intensive behavioural therapy that was a large part of the trials. So maybe saying you're the fastest at weight loss will get a company a whole host of publicity and sales. But as we know, faster is not necessarily better when it comes to weight loss. I know it's very tempting to want to lose weight fast. I would love to snap my fingers and all of my excess weight be gone, but not at the expense of fucking up my metabolic rate. And I think that's something to really consider. Just like the Biggest Loser, with Ozempic, there seems to be this lifetime sentence idea with taking it. Because many studies have shown that once people stop taking Ozempic, they regain most of their weight back. We're going to look at that further in upcoming episodes because it's not as simple as it sounds. Before I wrap up, I just want to draw your attention to a couple of articles that I've come across. One of them I find particularly interesting. It's got to do with that new drug that I talked about earlier that Novo Nordisk are developing. It's called CagriSema. This article from MedWatch, dated September 2024, which I'll attach to the show notes, talked about how in the phase 3 studies of CagriSema, they were going to reduce the semaglutide testing down from 2.4 milligrams to 1 milligram and 1.7 milligram dosages for weekly injections. Now, this is pretty unusual. And I saw a comment by a journalist who asked, does that mean that you're going to reduce the amount of Wegovy down from 2.4 to 1.7? And the answer was no. Because, I mean, really, how could they say yes? Think about it. The lawsuits would be incredible. And I think it's certainly a smarter financial decision to reduce a dosage when a drug is in the testing phase and isn't being prescribed to millions of people. I just can't imagine the lawsuits that Novo Nordisk would be facing if they turned around and said, well, now, about Wegovy. The last thing I want to draw your attention to, and I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes because it's a really interesting survey. It's a survey on real-world use of using semaglutide for weight loss. And they looked at nearly 170,000 people. It's by Blue Health Intelligence. On average, 79% users of the drugs were female, and the average age was 45 years old. What was really interesting about that was less than half of those that were prescribed the drug stayed on the medication for 12 weeks or more. Less than half. I mean, that's a crazy number. And only 42% of users made it past 12 weeks. They also found out that many people discontinued GLP-1s before achieving any clinically meaningful weight loss. Clinically meaningful is, I think, over 5% of your body weight. What they were trying to work out is how to get people to stay on semaglutides. So what would have happened if they've gone by Novo Nordisk's dosage recommendations, which I gather they have? That is the standard, that is the recommended from the manufacturer, is what would have happened before those 12 weeks is that at 4 weeks, they would have been instructed to double their dose. At 8 weeks, they would have been instructed to double it again. And then at the 12-week mark, they would have been told to put it up again. And we all know that as you increase the dosage, side effects increase. What I wonder when I look at this is, if there was a different way of prescribing this drug, if the recommendations were when you are on a, when you've taken a dosage that is working for you in terms of weight loss, stop at that level of dosage and see your doctor and talk to your doctor and have some, obviously you'll need supervision. But these people all had supervision. But I wonder if because of the doubling and doubling and doubling the dosage, if that what is that what made people drop out? This was a US study, FYI, and younger patients, which were aged 18 to 34, were more likely to drop out of treatment sooner. Here's what I wonder at the end of the day with the Wegovy trials. I wonder if in order to get a pretty stunning amount of weight loss lost, if the manufacturer Novo Nordisk increased the dosage because they knew it would lead to increased weight loss and therefore they could advertise that they are the fastest at weight loss. And possibly at the time, because this is a new weight loss drug, I wonder if at the time they were like, well, the side effects are not that bad. And I wonder if now they regret what they put on their packaging, but they can't change it because they'll get sued. I wonder if they regret saying, well, double your dosage. I wonder if they had changed their recommendations to when you've reached a dose that works for you, then stop at that dosage rather than doubling it and possibly getting more nausea and more stomach upsets and more headaches and more of the other side effects. And I wonder, now that I've looked at what they're doing with CagriSema, their new drug, where they're reducing the semaglutide before they even put it to market, it makes me even more suspicious about the dosage of Wegovy. Next week, we're going to be talking about the side effects. Finally, we're getting to the side effects because there are a lot of them. I'm going to try and sift through them quite quickly. And we're also going to be listening to an interview I had with a fantastic woman who suffered a lot of side effects from these drugs. And we'll hear her story, which is a really fascinating story. But I'll see you next week on Investigating Ozempic. Investigating Ozempic was written and produced by me, Bernadette Fisher, And please see the show notes for all of the medical disclaimers and all of the links to the documents that I've mentioned in this podcast.